home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're on an abbreviated week because of the holiday this week, and I'm excited to have an action-packed Wednesday to start out our programming for the day. It's going to be author Burt Golden, and he's got a novel out. It's been a bestseller on Amazon called Madness of March. We're going to be talking to Burt about him, his writing, all the cool stuff for the full hour tonight. And if you'd like to call in and ask Burt a question, you're welcome to do so. The hotline, of course, is open right now at 323-657-1493. Now, if you call in, here's the secret. I got a bunch of you that called in ahead of time, and I think I scared some of you because I thought you were Burt calling in early. If you want to talk or ask a question, you must press 1 on your keypad. Otherwise, I have no clue that you want to actually talk and ask a question. So if you feel like asking a question, we'll open up the phone lines for you. Burt's going to be on in just a moment. On Thursday's show, we have Rated LGBT Radio. My co-host Rob Watson and I will be talking about current events in the world. And on the Friday morning dance party, starting at 8 a.m. Pacific time, and you're going to say, Garrett, you must have lost your mind because the dance party at night can't start at 8 in the morning. Well, this week it can because our VIP special guest star is Mr. Jerry Hull. He's going to be live from the U.K., and he'll be actually our VIP special guest in hour number 2. So hour number 1, of course, is going to be your request. I've already got several that you've sent in. Thank you for that. And if you'd like to hear something this Friday in hour 1, it's all about you and what you want to hear. So just send me a note here on Facebook at The Garrett Miller, or send me a note at garrett@garrettmiller.com. If I've got it, I will play it, and I'll give you lots of shout-outs. But that starts out this Friday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, our guest tonight, again, is Mr. Burt Golden. We're going to be talking about his book, Madness of March, but he's also got Jericho's Walls, The Dead Listing. And if you are looking at the show tonight on your computer screen, if you see Burt's name in the body of the show, you'll notice his name is hyperlinked. Guess where it hyperlinks to? His Amazon author page. So as we're talking tonight and you get really excited about Burt's book and want to go check out what he's doing, you can simply click that and then go buy his books. I'm a big fan of supporting our guests who are on the show. And if you like what you think you're going to read, I'm going to tell you it's a page turner, Madness of March. I will always say buy 10 copies. You buy one for yourself and then gift 9 others to family and friends because, you know, you like to give good gifts, and having excellent reading material is one of them, especially if you are a sports fan and like basketball. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome Mr. Burt Golden to Rated G Radio. Burt, how are you tonight, my friend?
Hi, Garrett. Pleasure to be with you.
I'm so thrilled to have you here. And whenever a guest is booked on the show, I always like to do what I call the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon and thank the people who are responsible for connecting us. So we need to thank Maddie at Lit Up in Orange County for making the connection. She's probably one of the hardest working people I know to support authors and writers. And so, Maddie, thank you for recommending Burt contact us. But we scheduled this ages ago, Burt, and I'm so grateful that we're able to do this tonight. So how have you been?
I've been good and looking forward to this.
Well, before we get started talking about the writing, since this is our first time, you know, chit-chatting here on the show or even on the phone, I don't think we've spoken live before. I know we've been exchanging emails before the show began. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and, you know, where you came from before you started your career as a writer?
Well, sure. I'm a 79-year-old mystery writer, and I grew up in East Los Angeles where gunshots in the night attract little attention. But in spite of the neighborhood violence at the high school, it was trouble-free and a great place to go at Roosevelt High School in East Los Angeles. We had a multicultural environment where we had blacks, Jews, people of Russian, Italian, Mexican, and Japanese ancestry, and we got along great, and it was a terrific place to grow up. That's where my writing career started, at Roosevelt High School, where as a senior I was editor of the paper the first 6 months and wrote additionally for the LA Examiner. We had a scholastic sports page at the
wow.
LA Examiner was the was in competition with the LA Times at that time for readership. And the Scholastic Sports Association were comprised of members of the different high schools around Southern California who came in to write about high school sports, and I was one of the editors. And also I wrote for Raffo Shimpo and La Opinion, Raffo Shimpo being a Japanese language newspaper and La Opinion a Spanish language newspaper, and unfortunately, my words were interpreted, so it worked out okay. But my writing career got on hold for many decades because I was more interested in being a professional baseball player out of high school and went to college to be a baseball player. I thought I had to mature physically, and so I played baseball in college, and when I got an undergrad degree, I taught and coached basketball in high school for several years before moving on to college, where I coached college basketball for 7 years at Boise State and UC Irvine. And after that, I got into business. So this is my writing is my fifth career now.
I love that. So okay, Bert, can I ask you a question here? Because I know that you said that you were a writer back in the earlier days for Raffo Shimpo and then La Opinion. Do you sometimes, like, when we read things that are interpreted, you know, sometimes it loses its context. Did you get any feedback about how accurately your writing was translated after it went into print?
I did not, only from the LA Examiner. But I didn't from Raffo Shimpo or La Opinion. I guess they were, whatever they created, they were happy with it. So, and they wanted to learn about the athletes we had at Roosevelt High School, the athletic programs. And for Raffo Shimpo, we had a great high school player named Kaushin Zotto, who was an all LA City player, and they wanted to know all about him every week. So,
wow.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun doing that. And I also, right out of high school, got a job at the LA Examiner as a copy boy. But decided, as I said, I wanted to be a baseball player, so I got sidetracked.
So I'm fascinated, Bert, that, oh, by the way, I want to give a quick shout out to Lieutenant Dan in Helmand Pro, Afghanistan. They're having breakfast in the mess hall this morning, tuning into the show to hear you, Bert. So you've got listeners halfway around the world, and we thank you, everybody that's there, for your service today. I hope you're all going to have a safe day, and you things are easy for you today, if there's even such a thing when you're in service like that. But Bert, when you're a writer, how do you go from being a writer to say, you know what, I'm going to go and be a pro baseball player? I would assume that you're probably pretty good at both.
Baseball was my life, and so I played baseball every day, and used to work out on a daily basis and studied baseball and used to go to watch the old AAA teams play. And on Sundays I played semi-pro baseball. I was a pretty good baseball player. I was an all-city player in Los Angeles, and in college I was an all-conference player. But you know, when my time came to be a professional baseball player, I decided I wanted to be a coach instead. And it surprised the scout that had been watching me for a long time, but I think I made a good decision.
What was it about coaching that really excited you? You know, because I would think that, you know, as a player, you know, I've never played on the level that you have, Bert, so I could only imagine what that was like. But I would think that that would be so thrilling. What was a challenge for you? What was really fascinating to you as you're getting ready to be scouted and picked up to make that shift into being a coach?
Well, coaching is teaching. And coaching a team is about people, and it's about trust and teamwork. Mm-hmm. And I coached basketball for 19 years, so I find it was like the game was like leading an orchestra, because the tempo of the game was so important, and your team wanted to operate at a certain tempo to be successful, and the other team was trying to distort your tempo, and so it was my job to teach the our group to operate at a certain tempo at a certain time, and to not be affected adversely by what the other team was trying to do to us. So I really enjoyed that.
It just sounds like, you know, you apply a lot of business principles just, you know, to the coaching field, because it sounds like that's exactly what you would do if you're in the boardroom, or, you know, you're managing a team inside your widget office of doing whatever it is that you're going to do. So after you got done coaching, though, you went on to help executives that were, I always say, asked to find happiness elsewhere, but basically fired executives. So how did you get into helping, you know, these C-level people, you know, find their mojo again?
That was difficult, because when I left coaching, I had no idea what I wanted to do. It was just time to leave coaching, and all my life I had read the sports page and never read the business page. And what I had to do was really get out and research what was going on in the business world. And this was back in the 80s, and I thought that there were going to be a lot of people that were going to lose their jobs. I bet on that, and developed an outplacement business, which your listeners might not know. It's the counseling and repositioning of executives who were terminated from their jobs. And we happened to develop a system that worked very well, and I'm very proud of, and where we had clients that average $85,000 in compensation, annual compensation, and we help them get repositioned in 2.7 months.
Wow.
Which,
that's quick.
We worked very hard.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And it's, you know, it's about people. It's, you know, some people think that outplacement is about what it's on paper, that you can help somebody to reposition themselves by going through a system that's all on paper, but it's not. It's all in the mind.
So when
I think we did a heck of a job counseling.
So what would be like one of the biggest challenges you'd run into with one of these executives? Because I would think that, you know, outside of being fired, most executives, you know, kind of have this, you know, look how impressive I am, you know, attitude, even if they're humble about it. You know, they don't get to a certain level without having a little bravado. You know, how does that change when you would start working with these folks, or does it change?
Well, there's a lot of change going on. And I recall one top executive who was an executive vice president of a big company, and the president didn't like him and fired him. And he took his all his toys away. He took his limousine. He took his phones. He took his keys. And then in 10 minutes, the guy was out the door.
Wow.
Which was a big blow. You know, it's a big blow to anyone when they get terminated, but bigger to this guy. And we created an office for him. And the secretary. But that wasn't the important thing. What the important thing was that he would have the ability and the audacity to to go out and talk to people about this particular situation and what he had to offer them. And to find that everybody has something special to offer. And with him, incidentally, he found his job sitting on the top row of the Little League baseball stands. And in the row right below him were people that were in the banking business. And he got in conversation with them. And they were on the board of directors at a local bank. And they hired him as president.
Wow.
And, so it was, but that one took longer than 2.7 months, because he was making a big, lot of money. And it's, you know, they say that it takes 1 month for every $10,000 you're earning to reposition yourself. And although he beat the odds, it was a very strenuous time for him. Very difficult time. So sometimes there were calls that used to come in. My phone was always live. So I remember one time there was a call that came in from a client, and it was just, the pressure was too great for him, and he just had to talk to somebody. And it was 9 o'clock at night. I recall getting into my car and driving to West Los Angeles to meet with him, and we met and we hooked up around 10:30 and talked till 12:30, and he was okay.
Wow.
Then. And he got a job as a vice president of a pharmaceutical company, so it worked out.
Well, when did you decide that, okay, I've helped enough people, it's time for me to hang up my hat and stay home and do nothing? Of course, we know that's not the case, because we're going to be talking
actually,
about your book.
The outplacement business was a pretty large business, and we had several offices. We had one in Orange County, one in Los Angeles, one in San Diego. We did business in Portland, Oregon, and in Dallas, Texas. So when I sold the business, I retired for a while. And But then I retirement was no good for me, and I had to, you know, get into another form of business, and went back to teach at my old high school, at Roosevelt High School.
Oh, wow.
Which at that time was the toughest school in the city. And so here I want to give back, but I find out, even though I had 12 years of high school teaching experience, I had no idea what called for at the school with those students at that time. And although we had some great kids in each class, there was a certain segment of the student population that thought that the teachers were the enemy. And so we had to come up with something that they would believe I was on their side. And it took a year to figure it out. But finally, I figured that if I brought their parents in that were looking for jobs, and of course I knew how to help people with jobs, how to get jobs. So their relatives came into the classroom on my hour off, and we spent some time helping them reposition themselves.
Oh, my word. Did you just want to, you must have felt like Santa Claus or something like that, because, you know, at the end of the day, being able to touch those people's lives in ways that, number one, they never expected, and two, you probably didn't either. That must have been really rewarding.
It was one of the most rewarding things I ever did in my life.
So when did you decide that, you know what, I think it's time for me to pick up the pen and start making some magic on the paper again?
It was in 2008. I had a real estate relocation business, a national business. And in the relocation,
can I ask which one?
What's that?
Can I ask which one, Bert?
Well, it was Coaches Relocation Services. It was a business where we had agreements with the National Association of Basketball Coaches, the National Association of Women's Basketball Coaches, and the National Association of Soccer Coaches. So we were working with 30,000 people who relocated regularly.
Yeah.
Most of them were in college.
My experience before this is in relocation, Bert. So this is probably why we're connected. There's some cosmic reason why we're talking, besides the fact that you've had this great book, Madness of March. So what a small world this is.
Yes, it is.
So in 2008, though, you sat down and started writing. Did you know that Madness of March was going to be the book that you'd ultimately create, or did you start on something else first?
I started on a memoir of my time at the University of Oregon, in my 6 months there, and put that aside. I never published that book, and thought that I had an idea to write a novel, and started on it was a what if. What if this happened? How would this protagonist deal with this situation? And who was the antagonist? And where was the setting? And from that, I developed the characters, their wants, their fears, their background, socially, physically, and mentally. I had for that book, I had to go back. I'm getting off on your question, but I had to go back to Atlantic City, where most of the book takes place. And I thought that was a great setting for the book. So, because we needed a casino and a place that would really thrive on a college basketball team, like it was good business for the city.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's no college in Atlantic City, except there's a junior college, but there's no 4-year school. But we put one in and had to find out off of the boardwalk where we wanted the college to be. And talk to the people at Boardwalk Hall, which was the first dome stadium. It was built in 1929.
Wow.
And they played college basketball there. There's a conference that holds their finals there. And Boardwalk Hall is just right off the boardwalk. So we spent a week. My wife and I flew back there and spent a week figuring out where the where our story would take place, and learning about the boardwalk and the retail shops and the people there, and so it was a lot of fun. Now I got off on your question, I know, but that's
a nice segue into Madness of March, because that's the character that. Well, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the characters, but before we do that, can I ask you about, because I know that you said you came up with like the character development, and how much time did you put into figuring out who these people were at their core before you introduced them onto the page?
I put in a lot of time. I don't know exactly how much time, but I outlined the book before I wrote it, and that took a month. One of the characters was difficult for me to work with, and I didn't have normally I can find an actor or an actress that fits into the book as it becomes one of the characters. And in this book, Jimmy Wheeler, who was the vice president of Hot Shoe Athletic Shoes, and was the most powerful person in college basketball, in my mind was Danny DeVito. So
that's a great character.
He would just do wonderfully well in that part.
And for some reason, Bert, I picture Wheeler as somebody who's like, you know, 7 feet tall and just really physically impressive.
Well, good. the Danny DeVito that I knew, that I learned from watching his films, was, in my mind, was perfect for this role. At least his character was.
Well, I'm going to have to read the rest of the book, and I'm going to put Danny DeVito in that Wheeler role now. And so now my whole paradigm changes. So I can't wait to finish this out.
Yeah. Well, to continue about Madness of March, Conrad Burns, the protagonist, starts off as a high school basketball coach with dreams of coaching a college team to the MC2A championship. But he's depressed by the loss of his wife and son. And to come out of this depression, he attends a positive thinking seminar entitled Winning Dynamics. And his and he, when he comes out of that seminar, everything in his world is positive. Even negative things are positive. And that's his problem. Because from that point forward, his life goes to hell for a long time, and he doesn't know it or appreciate it. And he takes with him to Sheldrake College in Atlantic City a 6'9" 18-year-old named Pico Rimpaugh, who is a basketball marvel but a street guy, somebody who lived half his life in the home for battered and abused kids, and half his life on the street. And it's quite a transition for Pico Rimpaugh as it is for Conrad Burns, because Conrad Burns had no experience as a assistant college basketball coach, and Pico Rimpaugh had no experience outside of, you know, his little world, although he was a great player. Living at Sheldrake College was difficult for him. So the just the thing about Pico Rimpaugh, of course, he was found in a on the corner of Pico and Rimpaugh when he was an infant, and so that's how he got his name from the
I loved that
home. Pico Rimpaugh.
Yeah. And Bert, this might be a good time for us to take a real quick commercial break. So if you want to get a sip of water, everybody, or run to the bathroom, just turn up the speakers really loud, because I'm going to play an ad for It Matters Radio and then our friends at Rainbow Brew. So we're going to be back more with Mr. Bert Golden, author of Madness of March, his basketball sports murder mystery thriller. It's a page turner, and you can get it on Amazon. There's a link to Bert's Amazon author page right on the show page. Just click the hyperlink on his name, and it will connect you there. So during the break, you can go buy some books, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, Duff, man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Oh, why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, laddie, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful of alcohol, one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
We're joined tonight by Mr. Burt Golden. He's the author of Madness of March, an Amazon.com best-selling novel. If you have the Kindle Unlimited, you can get it tonight for free. It's also available for $2.99 to buy, delivered wirelessly down to your iPad or other reading device that has the Kindle or, you know, software stuff on it. Bert's also got Jericho's Walls. We haven't talked about that, so we'll need to have him back to talk in more detail about that. And then a new book called The Dead Listing. So all of these are available tonight for you right there on Amazon. A link to Bert's Amazon author page is connected to his name. It's just a hyperlink. And that will allow you to go and purchase his books tonight. I always ask you to, you know, pick up a couple, pick up 10, one for you and then 9 for your friends and family. You can gift them and it makes a nice reading present, you know, especially if you know somebody who's into sports and basketball or murder and mystery and intrigue. So, Bert, before the break, we were talking about the star player Pico and some of the, you know, things that were going on. I noticed that in the book, you have a lot of very interesting names for the basketball players themselves. Where did you draw inspiration to name your players?
The people that I've known over the years, most of them in East Los Angeles, and I thought I wanted the readers to remember the players, so that's why I gave them interesting names.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that makes the story, for me, easier to connect with, because sometimes, you know, if you have characters that you that are easily forgettable, you easily forget them. And the people that you write about in this book, you remember them from the first time that you introduced them onto the page, not only from your descriptions of them, but also their character development as people as well. So as you were getting ready to, you know, finish this book, since this is your first published book, or at least the first one here on Amazon, what was it like, Bert, when you got that first printed copy in your hand and were able to, you know, hold it and feel it and touch it and smell it?
I looked for errors. I'm a perfectionist. And so I wanted to see where I messed up, but I didn't. So that was okay.
Well, you did good. You did good. So when did you learn anything about yourself as you were writing the book?
Well, before I got into writing the book, there was somebody that gave me some advice that that helped me write Madness of March. It was a woman in our critique room named Melody Shore, who's a creative writing instructor. And she told me I had to be a student of the game. And I wasn't at that time, and that I had to not only be a member of the critique group, but read more how-to books, go to writing seminars, and really get in depth in the craft of writing. And so it was a wake-up call for me, and that really helped me write Madness of March. What I found out about myself, of course, was that I could write a novel, period. And when it became a bestseller, I was 76 years old and just pleased and delighted and surprised that it was a bestseller. And, in for a long time, it was ahead of Calico Joe, which was John Grisham's book.
Wow.
Also a sports fiction, not his best book. And the odd thing was that John Grisham is my hero. So to have that happen was very unusual.
Well, I will tell you, Bert, that in reading Madness of March, that I don't know what I was expecting. I never know when I have an author on, you know, what to expect for their writing style or character development or the flow of the book. But I was really surprised at how quickly you engage the listener to get them really invested in Conrad Burns. So, you know, and he's the main character as the coach, to get you involved. And then you just see him going down this winding path. And I, you know, it's kind of like watching a horror film when you say, don't go in the attic or don't go in the basement. And they do it anyway. But you take us on this journey with him.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, as they
right.
say.
So do you think that, I don't know. I really felt for Conrad because I think that, you know, that seminar, and the funny thing is, I will tell you, Bert, I love a good self-help book. I love a good seminar. I love a good, you know, audio presentation, whatever you want. So those just, there's something about them that resonate with me. So when you start off the book about he just finished this self-help workshop, I'm like, oh, I'm going to like this. And then he starts quoting off all of these things. And, you know, you see the situations he puts himself in. And I'm like, ooh, Conrad, I don't think that's the direction you should be going. What are you doing? And he finds himself, I think, in neck deep before, you know, he can really do much of anything, and he doesn't see a way out. So the fact that you put him in these situations that are really quite precarious, I found entertaining, but I can see how easily someone would slip into, you know, having something like this happen, because it just reeks of, if I said reality, I don't know if that's the right word, but that's how I read it. I was like, oh, I could totally see this happening. I've been in a situation like that before. So your style of writing, I think, is one that really speaks to a lot of folks. And, you know, whether or not they've been, you know, coerced to go and play, be a basketball coach for a fictitious college in Atlantic City or whatever career they've been. And I think people can relate to the situations that you're writing about. And it's fascinating look at the, you know, the psyche of that particular character. So
thank you.
When we get into, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
No, go ahead.
Go on. My writing style has changed in the last couple of years because I started writing about and creating a character named Tony Bravo, who is Philip Marlowe reincarnated. If you remember Philip Marlowe from the Raymond Chandler
right.
Books, like The Long Goodbye or The Big Sleep, you know, noir mystery. And I'm having a lot of fun with that. Do you want me to go into that? Or?
Sure. Well, you know, give us a teaser, because, you know, if we could sell some books tonight, that would be a good thing.
Well, Tony Bravo is in his best case world. He's a realtor in the morning and a private eye in the afternoon. And he carries with him that the sarcasm that Philip Marlowe used to carry with him. And so the first book was The Dead Listing, and now I'm on page 190 of the second book, and I'll be thrilled to get to page 191. But it's becoming very challenging. So in the book I'm writing now, Tony Bravo is drawn in the trouble through a dating site.
And oh, my goodness.
So, you know, he it's a site that he never should have gone on.
Right.
He never should have met the person that he hooked up with, who was a Superior Court judge, Orange County Superior Court judge in trouble. And that leads him down a path which, Conrad Burns, there's no turning back for Tony Bravo. So it's fun. It's a fun ride for me.
Where do you come up with your ideas to create interesting stories. I think that's the thing that I'm always fascinated about with authors, especially if they've, you know, you've now got three, you're working on four, and you have these people that are just coming to life. You know, where do you find this inspiration from here, Bert?
I don't know. I wish I knew that I could come up with better stories, but it usually is a what if. And I started reading Raymond Chandler again. I've read him a couple of times and thought this is a few years ago, that, you know, what if there was a modern day Philip Marlowe? What would he be like?
Mm-hmm.
And what do I know that could help the story along? Well, I know a little bit about real estate. I had a real estate license when we had the relocation company. So I knew a little bit about that, and I knew a little bit about Newport Beach, where most of the story takes place. And but the rest, Garrett, I don't know where it comes from.
So what's your writing process, Bert? Do you have a set number of hours a day that you write, or number of words or pages? What kind of a structure do you give yourself to be creative?
I write 3 or 4 hours every morning. And it's either writing new stuff. If I write something new, it's usually on a yellow tablet, and from there it goes into the computer. So I'm writing something new, or I'm editing, re-editing, rewriting. It's all 3 or 4 hours every morning, and I don't take much time off on the weekends.
It probably keeps you out of trouble.
It does. That's what my wife says.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you write on yellow tablets, because anytime that I really want to do something, I have notebooks all over my place, and they're each labeled for a different, you know, project or thing that I'm working on. And I always write it down. It is rare that I sit down and just write free flow on the computer. That just doesn't really resonate with me. But I'm not sure how many people that, you know, really works for anymore, writing it by hand, because you can probably, you know, think faster than you can write. And I don't know. But I like that process. Why does that work so well for you?
Well, I don't know. I'm ambidextrous, and so I try and get my right brain engaged by writing with my left hand, which I write right-handed, but I try and get my right brain working. So. And it seems to work. The creative side of me seems to come out when I do that. So that's all I know.
I am fascinated
to describe how where your creativity comes from, and I try and find a special place to write at a special time with. And I can write in a coffee shop. I can go to a coffee shop as long as it's, you know, kind of quiet. If somebody in the next booth is pretty loud, then I don't function very well. I have to leave. But at home, I usually, there's a place in the living room where I sit down in a certain chair at a certain time and have a cup of tea early in the morning. The other morning I was up at 5 writing.
Wow.
And did a good job. So I was pleased. But I'm not pleased if I don't do a good job.
You seem like a perfectionist, so I would tend to agree with you on that. So what do you do if you have a bad writing day, or a bad story, or a bad chapter? What happened? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Rewrite.
Okay.
Writing is about rewrite, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hemingway wrote it was The Old Man and the Sea. He rewrote it 250 times.
Wow.
And if I go 20 times, that's a lot for me. But if something isn't right, you have to do it. And you know, when I first started writing, I thought, well, everything I write is in concrete. This is the way it is. This is the finished product. But it never is the finished product. It's only the beginning.
So when you wrote Madness of March as an example, I mean, were you surprised at the number of times that you had to go back in and make edits?
Yes.
I am the
world's worst editor. And it's funny, you know, you can write a book that sells, but you can't edit it worth a damn.
Right.
And that's me. So I have people that help me. And it works out. I've had two line edits on the dead listing, and that worked out well. And I think I've developed a process now where I can turn out a pretty good book with errors that would be hard to find.
Well, you've got the practice in now, so you know now you're on a roll.
I hope so.
Yeah. So if we shift gears as we head towards the end of our time together here, Bert, can we talk about the business of being a writer? When you decided to sit down and write Madness of March, and this is going to be your first book that's published back in 2012, did you have any concept of what it was going to take to market and sell your book?
I had a good friend that had just sold 114,000 copies, and it was solely an ebook. And he convinced me that's what I should do, and so I did that, not knowing what was going to happen with it, and I, incidentally, I don't use any social media, which might surprise you, but it surprised a lot of the people that are listening. All I did was put the book up. And
what happened when you put it up? How did it become a bestseller?
It took 6 months for people to notice, and then it just happened to take off in book sales. And I started following it. You could follow it on Amazon, your book sales. And it was like, you know, one hour it was 10, and then the next hour it was 50, and then 100. And I was amazed at what was going on. But my friend Jeff told me, he said, be patient, because when it takes off, it's going to really take off. And it did. And so one day I may use a lot of social media, but I haven't yet.
Well, it sounds like you've got a good following, and you know you're building your readership. Well, I mean, especially as a best-selling Amazon author, because that takes a little bit of effort on your part.
And luck, I think.
Well, there's a lot of luck, yeah.
Yeah.
So how have your other two books been received, Jericho's Walls and The Dead Listing?
Jericho's Walls, I've been told, should be a movie, but it didn't sell as well as Madness of March, and The Dead Listing just came on and will be an ebook also in the next month. So we'll know more about that then.
Very good. And then
well,
let me ask,
early for The Dead Listing.
Well, because that just came out in April, the end of April. For your books, one of the things that I like about your books here, Bert, is that the covers are engaging or they're eye-catching. How did you decide on who would do the artwork for your covers?
Well, again, my friend Jeff Sherritt introduced me to the person that did the artwork, and she's very patient with me, because I'll come in with ideas and she'll work with me. And so that's worked out well for the books that we have on.
Well, and I think what I like most about The Madness of March is the fact that you do have the Atlantic City boardwalk, but then you've got Pico's shoes and his basketball that he doesn't want to part with anybody. And that's just like right there smack dab in your face. So can I, okay, this is probably one of my last questions here for you, Bert. How did you decide that, because, you know, you said you were going to be a baseball player and you're going to go and do all these magical things before you were a coach. And then when you go to write a book, you're writing about basketball, a sport that, you know, you may have known about, but it wasn't like ingrained in you like baseball. Why did you switch sports into something that was foreign territory?
Well, this is a good story here. I wanted to be a high school coach, and in order to be a high school coach, I thought you had to be able to coach two sports, one in the fall and one in the spring. And while my spring sport, baseball, I knew I could handle, I needed to coach another sport, and I played a little basketball in high school, although I wasn't very good. And I was taking an English lit class in college, and I was a senior, and I was flunking the class. I hated the teacher. I hated Henry James. I hated the wasteland. I should have checked out of the class, but I kept going for some reason. And one day, the guy in front of me had a Sports Illustrated book in his hand, and I said, let me read the book. I said, I'm flunking this class. I don't know why I'm here, but let me read this book during the hour while you can be a student. So he let me read the Sports Illustrated magazine, and in that magazine was an article about a guy named Bob Cousy, who was at that time playing for the Boston Celtics and was the best player in the first 50 years of basketball. And he had a basketball camp in New Hampshire, and here I was in Los Angeles. And I thought, well, that's what I should do. I should go back to this basketball camp and learn basketball. I should learn how to be a coach. And so I wrote him a letter during that hour and went home, typed it up, mailed it. And 2 weeks later, a letter comes back from him and said, come on.
Wow.
And so I flew back to New York, spent some time in New York, and then took a train up to New Hampshire and spent the summer at the camp. And on my days off, I never took a day off. On my days off, I talked basketball with Bob Cousy.
Oh.
And so that's how I got started.
Wow. That's a great story in itself.
Yes, it is.
So,
and it's true.
Bert, at 79 years young, what's next for you?
Well, I hope to write a good book that I'm on. I hope, and I really, you know, you never know how long you're going to live. So, but I envision myself writing 3 or 4 more books.
Love that.
Well, I hope you enjoy them, and I hope that my dream is real. And I just right now want the book I'm working on to be the best I've ever written. And so that would be a goal that if I accomplished that, I would feel very good about.
And what do you do for fun?
This is fun.
Well, if you had to take a break because you've written your 5 hours of writing a day, what else would you do in your day if you had a choice?
Go to Italy.
That sounds lovely. Have you been there before?
I have. Been to Venice many times and Rome many times and love those towns. There's a lot of Italy I haven't seen, and maybe this summer we'll take off and go there. But in the afternoons I exercise, so and there's always stuff to do. I don't know why there's always stuff to do around the house.
Is that true? Does your wife give you a honey-do list?
I seem to find I have a list that I am yet to accomplish.
Okay.
But one day I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to take
okay.
care of those things.
Very good. And Bert, last question of the day. If you had any fans that are listening tonight or other authors who are out there, what words of inspiration would you like to leave them with?
Well, you know, I was 76 when I wrote a bestseller, or when a bestseller happened to come into fruition. And if I can do it, I think anybody can do it. And I think everybody has a book in them. And if somebody had the desire and the will to write that book, I think they should go forward with it and be patient and get in the critique group and work on it and not give up. I think that's the issue. I don't know how many times I've given up when I wrote Madness of March, maybe every day. But I think if I can do it, if I can accomplish what I've done, everyone else can do it too.
Well, very good. Everybody, it's been Mr. Bert Golden. He's the author of Madness of March, plus two other novels, including The Dead Listing and Jericho's Walls. All three are available on Amazon.com from his author page, which is hyperlinked with his name right here on the show page tonight. So if you'd like to go buy his books, please go do that. We'll see you live tomorrow night on Rated LGBT Radio with Rob Watson, and then Friday morning at 8 o'clock on the Friday Morning Dance Party. This is a little sneak preview. I've got a new music video coming up this Friday for my new single called Unlike You. Here's a little preview before the show is up tonight, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Bert, thank you. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you, Eric.
Picture just the other day, it looks good in black and white. Memories of love, they dim over time. We never were quite right. Sometimes it's just storm clouds above that drift into our sight. Tears fell like rain, the ocean waves crashing, passing by in the night. The lightning made you blind, unlike you, I see me. The man I cannot friend, the man I can't pretend to be. Unlike you, I see me. Time I cannot spend, chasing after make-believe. Back to square one would be so easy, reliving all those blacked out days. Could I make it all up, fake it all once again? You'd think I'd finally lift the haze. Sometimes it's just storm clouds above that drift into our sight. Tears fell like rain, the ocean waves crashing, passing by in the night. Unlike you, I see me. The man I cannot friend, the man I can't pretend to be. Unlike you, I see me. Time I cannot spend, chasing after make-believe. Going by so fast, but you will be just.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.